from TSN, Ray Ferraro joins us. Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It was, it was a little bit different game then.
Yeah, well, Ray, I don't care. No one else was getting 108 goals.
No, that's true. I mean, I had 43 power play goals that year. We had a pretty good power play.
Yeah, that's not a bad. Now, out of those 15 hat tricks, was there any 5-goal games?
That I don't know. I know I had 7.
In a game?
Yeah, it's me and I think 3 or 4 other guys have 7 in a game.
Wow.
I had 6 after 2 periods. And
then you slowed down.
The record was 7, and my recollection is I had, 2 or 3 really good chances, and then I scored with about a minute left.
And what was the final score in that game?
11-4, something like that, 11-5. Yeah, there was no trapping.
Yeah, did you have any apples that game to go with the goals, or just a Cy Young?
Oh, why pass?
Yeah, why pass? Well, hey, if you're that hot, really, why would you pass?
Timo Solani said something today that kind of applies to that, and he said somebody asked him about why goals are so difficult to come by, and he said when he was back in Winnipeg, him and Phil Housley had this breakout play, and he said, you'd get 15 breakaways a year because there was no video. And he's like, now there's, teams wouldn't figure it out till the end of the year. He said, now there's so much coaching and so much video, and it's just way more difficult to take anybody by surprise anymore. And he's right. I mean, nobody knew what we were doing on our power play. But if they would have scouted it or had the means to scout it, it would have been way easier. I mean, you're talking about the Western Hockey League, and the teams now have access to everybody's video. That's at the junior level. You can imagine how much more advanced it is as you go up the food chain.
Ray Ferraro joins us. Let's go up that food chain. Tonight, Montreal, Boston. Let's start there. Boston, I don't know if they completely dominated Game 5, but the score definitely was in their favor early on, Ray. It's amazing the emotional roller coaster from a game to game and how the momentum this year in the playoffs doesn't really seem to carry over. I don't know if it ever does, right? But Montreal's back at home. What do you expect them to do different in their game to get this to Game 7?
Well, about the momentum, I mean, in my opinion, the only way momentum carries game to game is if one team is way better than the other. And you just can't slow it down. So it looks like there's momentum, but the fact of the matter is that one team is just better. There is momentum in a game. I mean, I saw it in the game in Los Angeles the other night. Anaheim went 25 and a half minutes without a shot. I mean, you talk about momentum. It was all one way.
Yeah.
So, I think it matters in game. When the teams are similarly matched, I don't really think it goes game to game. What I saw the other night and what has to change is that, everybody talks about Boston and their physical play, but to me, their physical play leads them to playing much faster. They forecheck better, so Montreal's not able to cleanly break the puck out of their zone. So when they scrum around in their zone for 15 or 20 seconds, now the defending team, Montreal's tired. They flip the puck out to the Bruins zone so they can change. And while they're changing, the Bruins are collecting the puck and charging right back into Montreal's zone again. And so while it is the physical play, it's that they can play faster. And that really becomes a death to any offense that you want to create because you never have control of the puck. You might get to it, but you got to shoot it away. And that really became a problem for Montreal. When Boston gets going, that's the biggest problem. So how do you change it is that you try and get up the ice quicker to pressure the Bruins to get rid of the puck quicker. And if they get rid of it quicker, then your defense can get back and make a direct pass and you can get out of the zone. If they don't get up the ice to pressure the Bruins and the Bruins can move the puck a couple times before they chip and chase, it's going to be a long night for Montreal.
Ray Ferraro joins us. Ray, we saw John Gibson get his first NHL start. I think he's the only goalie ever to have his first regular and playoff starts result in shutouts. And now it looks like Nathan Beaulieu might be getting his first start. I guess if you can go with a rookie goaltender, you can easily insert Beaulieu into Game 6 on the blue line, can't you?
Oh, I mean, you can for sure. It's not, I would say there's a couple differences. Number one is Beaulieu has played more in the NHL this year than certainly than Gibson did. you can't be spotted if you're the goalie. You're either in or you're out. Montreal's at home. They've got last change. If they're, you know, if they don't want to get bowl you out against Milan Lucic, they can, and David Krejci and Jerome McGinley, they can get them off the ice at a whistle. I mean, you're the goalie. You're in. That's it. I don't mind this by Montreal. And again, it goes back to what we were just talking about, and which is the need to get back to the pucks quicker, to move it with a direct pass to your partner or to the centerman so you can get out of your zone. You know, a lot of times, you know, I think the initial thought is you've got a big, beefy team, so you've got to have big, beefy players to match up. Well, if you want to match up against Milan Lucic, you don't have Milan Lucic. You've just got another big guy who's probably not as good. So there's two ways to go. One is to dress a big hulking guy like Douglas Murray, or to try somebody like Beaulieu. Go back to the 97 Cup final when the Flyers had the Legion of Doom, and they were going to run right over top of Detroit, except Scotty Bowman paired Larry Murphy and Nick Lidstrom together. And while LeClaire and Renberg and Lindros were trying to crash around in the zone, Lidstrom and Murphy made two direct passes, and they were out of the zone. And so there's a prime example of using a contrasting style player against a big physical line.
Ray, speaking of the Ducks, you mentioned how they had no shots for an extended period of time. I think they only had four in the last 40 minutes, but they won the game. So were they just sitting back trying to protect their young goaltender? And what's your thoughts on that strategy? Obviously, it worked for one game, but I don't know if Anaheim can expect to win much if they're only getting four shots every 40 minutes.
I will say, with every nickel in my account, that was not their strategy.
Okay.
To try and not ever shoot the puck would be a rather foolish coaching strategy. Bruce Boudreau said he kept thinking behind the bench, man, that Corsi stuff's going to come back to bite me. I mean, the shot attempts were 71-36 in the game. At one stretch, or at one commercial rather, I was between the benches, Martin Jones comes over to get a drink of water. He took off his mask. Jason, his hair was bone dry. It was like he was sitting in a lawn chair watching an NHL game. The puck never came to his end. And what I think happened is Anaheim, through the course of their rotation of players, they've become really, really young on the back end. Hampus Lindholm is 20. Sami Vatanen is 22. Cam Fowler is 22, shortly to be 23. They looked like they got spooked a little bit. Every time they got the puck, they got rid of it as fast as they could. And again, we'll go back to the Boston-Montreal stuff. You get rid of it, you barely get out of your zone and change, and here comes the other team again. And it was like wave after wave. What they did do really well is when LA got into the zone and shot the puck, they blocked it well. And when the puck got to Gibson, two things happened. One, he was and is really good at controlling where the puck goes after he stops it. And number two, they did a nice job of shielding the LA forwards away from the front of the net. And so while there was all kinds of pressure, you know, I can remember three or four saves that you went, oh man, that was an unbelievable save. One of them, Getzlaff made it in the crease. One was on Tanner Pearson. He made a sliding right pad stop. One was on Tyler Toffoli. He made a left pad stop. And one was on Marian Gabrick. He made a glove save. But other than that, it was a pretty garden variety type stops for him. He's an excellent goalie. Now, I know a lot of people are just catching up to who the heck John Gibson is. Doing the World Junior Tournament, I get the benefit of seeing some of these kids before they get to the NHL. And I saw him a couple of years ago in Edmonton. He played one game. Saw him last year or 2 years ago in Ufa, where he was the MVP of the tournament. And then I saw him last night, or the other night, 2 nights ago. And he's looked the same every night to me. He doesn't get flustered. He's a big guy who really, really is able to control how he moves and where the puck goes after he stops it. He is the bluest of blue chipper in Anaheim's system.
Ray, one last one for you. Pittsburgh today, I don't know if you've seen the quote yet, But there was the story, of course, Marilyn Mew and Sidney Crosby. And Rob Rossi had it in his article. He said, quote, this was Lemieux telling Crosby, "You can't behave like the way you did at the end of the game. It gives off a bad vibe to your teammates. It gives off a vibe that might be portraying you in a negative light, especially when you're struggling. Star players just have to fight through things like this." So what do you make of the Crosby situation, and how do you feel he responds in Game 7?
I think it's great advice. I've looked, you know, I've done several Penguins games in the playoffs over the last couple of years, dating back to that absolutely out of control series against Philadelphia, and they do come unhinged. And part of it is Crosby, and part of it is the makeup of their players. But Mario is right that the Penguins will take their lead from Crosby. There's just no question about that. When the Russians first came over, one of the most frustrating things was, and I had played against them in the World Championships a little bit, is you could slash them or punch them in the face or cross-check them, no emotion, nothing. It is unbelievably frustrating when you get a blank stare back from them. Now, I think Pittsburgh can do a little bit to help as well, but it starts with Crosby. I mean, he's the best player in the world, and with it goes the scrutiny, with it goes the plum defensive players playing against you, and you have to be able to fight through it, and you have to be able to keep your emotions from bubbling over top. I don't think they should play Malkin and Crosby together. To me, it's foolish, because the Rangers have one unbelievable defensive pair, and that's Girardi and McDonough. What an easy matchup for them.
Yeah,
Malkin and Crosby go over the boards, out go Girardi and McDonough. Why not separate them, play Malkin and Neal together, which they always do, play Crosby and Kunitz together, which they always do, spot in Jussi Jokinen with Malkin, put Lee Stempniak or Brian Gibbons or Bo Bennett, move them around with Crosby, because it's not an ideal spot, what they have there, but make them spread them out. Would you rather have Crosby playing against Mark Stahl and Anton Strålman once in a while? I would. I mean, I think that's a better matchup than having to go against Girardi and McDonough. I mean, they just throw a blanket over top of you. And if you ever do get around them, then you got to beat Lundqvist. I think they've made it far too easy for them.
And lastly, right, are people, like, it's funny. The big controversy now is, oh, guys getting squirted with water. Now, people can say that maybe you shouldn't do it, but honestly, like, is this really that big of an issue in your mind?
The only place it's an issue is what Sean Thornton did the other day was garbage, because it was during the play.
Okay.
You just don't. Like, you got to remember, he had to be holding the water bottle. It can't be that spur of the moment.
Yeah.
You can't mind Jedi the water from the water holder over the boards. You got to be holding the damn thing. And so he squirts him during the play. That's Bush. It's minor league. And he knows it, and he basically said as much. The stuff Corey Perry did, I think, is really funny, where he filled up Jeff Carter's glove with water. I mean, I happen to think that's really funny. Because if it's that big a deal, Carter's going to say to the linesman who's standing there, hang on, dum-dum here just filled up my glove with water. I got to go get a new pair of gloves. And they'd let him go get a new pair of gloves. What Lundqvist did, if I were on the first whistle of Game 7, if I'm one of the Penguins players and I'm hanging around the net, I'd grab the water bottle off the top of his net and take a drink out of it.
Nice. I love that. Let's do it, yeah, for sure.
And then when the referee comes over, say, oh, he can squirt our player, but I'm thirsty. I just wanted a drink. It was just sitting here.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the same thing. It's just as foolish. For Lundqvist to say, hey, I do it all the time, oh, but I just happened to squirt Sidney Crosby with it. I know he squirts water on the ice. I see him do it all the time, but it's a big ice sheet. You didn't have to squirt it into the pile. And if it's about trying to unsettle somebody, and you're one of the Penguins, and you're thirsty, why not just grab the water bottle and take a sip? See how he likes that.
Yeah, I'll be all over it. I love it, Ray. Maybe we'll have three or four Game 7s the way this second round's shaping up. Should be fun. We'll talk to you again next week.
You betcha. Have a good one, Jason.